Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. This time, we're taking a look at the book of Ecclesiastes, or, as some people might call it, the downer book of the Bible.
Well, I wouldn't say downer, necessarily.
Okay, maybe a little heavy, but I think everyone can relate to it.
Oh, for sure.
You know, that feeling like you're just spinning your wheels and you can't quite figure out the point of it all.
Definitely. And that's where Ecclesiastes gets really interesting because, unlike a lot of other books in the Bible, this one doesn't offer these neat and tidy answers from God.
Right. So we're not dealing with prophecy or miracles. Mm-hmm. We're dealing with something much more like, well, human.
Exactly. And that's what Dr. Furrer calls the under the sun perspective. It's like, imagine you're Qohelet, the author, and you're just trying to make sense of the world based on your own observations and experiences.
So no divine intervention, no special hotline to God, just a guy, like, grappling with the big questions, right?
Yeah, and he doesn't sugarcoat anything. He talks about how fleeting life can feel, how our efforts often seem pointless, and how sometimes things just feel absurd.
Like the universe is playing a cosmic joke on us.
Kind of, yeah. Have you ever felt that way? Like, what's the point of it all?
I think we've all been there at some point. And that's what makes Ecclesiastes so relatable, even thousands of years after it was written.
And right in the middle of all that heaviness, Qohelet sets out on this quest for Yitron.
Okay, so now we're getting to the good stuff. What's Yitron?
It's a Hebrew word that can be translated as gain, surplus, profit, even advantage. It's like Qohelet is trying to find that one thing, that secret ingredient that will give life meaning.
So it's kind of like the holy grail of existential fulfillment, right?
You could say that. And to find it, he uses wisdom as his main tool, you know, observing the world, trying to figure out how things work.
Makes sense. You'd think wisdom would be the key, right? But even that has its limits, according to Qohelet.
Yeah, he hits this wall, this realization that even with all the wisdom in the world, we can't fully grasp God's ways.
So it's like there are some things we're just not meant to understand.
It seems that way. In Ecclesiastes 8.16.17, he even says, no one can comprehend what goes on under the sun. Despite all his efforts to search it out, man cannot discover its meaning. Even if a wise man claims he knows, he cannot really comprehend it.
Wow, that's humbling. It's like he's saying, look, I'm a wise guy, but even I can't crack this code.
Right. And that really highlights the central tension in Ecclesiastes. The vast difference between a sovereign God and us, well, mere mortals.
We're like ants trying to understand the workings of a supercomputer.
It's a good analogy. And there's this line that really drives that point home. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few.
It's a pretty clear reminder of who's in charge.
It's almost like, don't even try to question me, a little human.
Okay. But if God is so hands-off, why does it seem like he's still involved in our lives? Why even bother with us at all?
Well, that's the paradox, isn't it? Qohelet sees God's hand in both the good and the bad we experience, and it's not always clear why.
Yeah, that's what gets me. Like, if God's up there running the show, why does it seem so random sometimes?
Qohelet seems to suggest that our limitations aren't just accidental. It's almost like they're imposed by God.
Sovereignly imposed limitation, as Dr. Furr puts it.
Right. Like, what if our inability to understand is actually part of a bigger plan?
But why would God want to keep us in the dark? It feels almost unfair. Like, he's holding back.
I know. It's a difficult concept to grasp, but think of it this way. What if our desire to figure it all out could actually be dangerous?
Like, we get too smart for our own good.
It's possible. Remember the Tower of Babel story. What if those limitations are actually a form of protection, like a parent setting boundaries for a child who doesn't know any better?
So in a way, God's protecting us from ourselves.
Maybe. It's certainly something to consider.
Definitely food for thought. So we're left with this idea that God's in control, but we're stuck with these limitations, like cosmic blinders or something.
Yeah, it's kind of a mind-bending concept, right? Like, how are we supposed to live meaningful lives if we can't even see the whole picture?
It makes you wonder if our choices even matter in the grand scheme of things.
Oh, absolutely. And that's something Qohelet grapples with throughout Ecclesiastes, you know, the tension between God's sovereignty and our own free will.
So are we just puppets on strings, or do we actually have some say in how things play out?
It's not an easy question to answer, and Qohelet doesn't pretend to have all the answers.
Which I kind of appreciate, actually.
Mm.
He's not trying to shove some prepackaged theology down our throats.
Exactly. He's wrestling with these big questions right alongside us, inviting us into the struggle.
So it's okay to admit we're confused, that we don't have it all figured out.
Oh, more than okay. It's essential. That's where true wisdom begins, you know, with humility.
But if God is truly in control, what's the point of even trying? Does it even matter what choices we make?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And Qoheleth doesn't shy away from it. He acknowledges the tension, but he also offers some guidance.
Okay, I'm all ears. What's the secret formula for navigating this cosmic maze?
Well, there's no magic bullet, but Qoheleth does observe that things tend to go better for those who fear God.
Fear God? That sounds a little intense, doesn't it? Like Old Testament fire and brimstone kind of stuff.
It's not about cowering in terror or being paralyzed by anxiety. It's more about having a healthy respect for God's power and authority.
So it's about recognizing who's really in charge.
Exactly. It's about understanding our place in the grand scheme of things, accepting our limitations, and seeking to live in a way that honors God.
So it's not about blind obedience. It's about alignment, right? Like getting on the same page as God, even if we don't understand all the details.
Precisely. And Qoheleth uses some pretty vivid imagery to illustrate this point. He talks about how a wicked man might commit 100 crimes and seem to get away with it, living a long and prosperous life.
And that's where the whole justice issue comes back to bite us, right? It feels so unfair when the bad guys seem to win while the good guys get screwed over.
It's tempting to get caught up in those appearances, to question God's fairness. But Qoheleth urges us to take a long-term perspective. He reminds us that we're not seeing the whole picture.
So it's like saying, don't play the odds with God.
Exactly. Even if you see exceptions to the rule, wisdom lies in respecting the bigger picture, trusting that God's justice will prevail in the end, even if we don't see it play out in our lifetime.
Okay, that makes sense. But it also raises another question. If there's no guarantee of immediate reward, what's the motivation for being righteous? Why not just say YOLO and do whatever you want?
It's a valid question, and Qoheleth acknowledges the struggle. He warns against two extremes: being over-righteous to the point of self-destruction, and being a fool and over-wicked, tempting God and risking premature death.
So it's about finding that balance, living a righteous life, but also accepting that we don't have ultimate control over the outcome.
Right. It's about holding on to wisdom and righteousness, but not being surprised or disillusioned when things don't go according to plan. Remember, we're operating within those sovereignly imposed limitations.
Okay. I'm starting to see the bigger picture here. It's like, yes, make wise choices, live a good life, but don't expect a free pass. Life is still going to throw curveballs.
And sometimes those curveballs are going to knock us flat on our backs. But even in those moments, Qoheleth encourages us to remember that we're not alone.
Right. God's still there, even when we can't see him or understand what he's doing.
And that's where faith comes in. It's about trusting that even in the midst of suffering and uncertainty, God has a plan.
That's a tough pill to swallow sometimes, especially when we're going through difficult times.
Oh, absolutely. It's not easy to surrender control, to let go of our need to figure it all out. But that's where true freedom lies, in that surrender.
So it's not about ignoring the hard questions. It's about wrestling with them honestly, and then ultimately choosing to trust God even when it doesn't make sense.
Exactly. And that leads us to Qoheleth's final conclusions, the practical implications of his wisdom. In the next part of our deep dive, we'll explore how he encourages us to find meaning and joy in life, even amidst all the uncertainty and limitations we face.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about the limits of our understanding, the seeming absurdity of life, and how even with God in control, things can feel wildly unfair. So where do we land? Like, what's the takeaway for us sitting here listening right now?
You'd think after all that, Qoheleth would just leave us in this pit of despair.
Right, totally. It's been pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah, actually, that's not what happens at all. It's almost like the more he grapples with these big questions, the more he finds hope.
Wait, seriously? Hope? In Ecclesiastes?
Yeah, it might sound counterintuitive, but I think you could argue that Ecclesiastes is ultimately a hopeful book, precisely because it's so honest about the struggles.
Okay, I need you to unpack that one for me because I'm not seeing it.
Well, think about it this way. We've talked about how God might be intentionally limiting us, right? Not to be cruel or anything, but maybe as a form of protection, like a parent setting boundaries for a child.
Right, right. That whole mind-blowing concept of sovereignly imposed limitation.
Exactly. And so if those limitations are actually coming from a place of love, then maybe. Maybe it changes how we view everything, even the hard stuff, the stuff that makes us question God's goodness.
Okay, I'm starting to see where you're going with this. So instead of fighting against those limits, what if we try to understand them? Like, try to see them from God's perspective.
And there's this line in the lectures that just jumps out at me. Dr. Furr says, to the man who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness.
So it's about being in right relationship with God. That makes sense.
It's not about following a set of rules or trying to earn God's favor. It's about dot connection.
Which honestly sounds a lot more appealing than, like, fire and brimstone judgment.
Right. And that connection, that relationship with God, it changes how we experience everything. Even the simple things like eating, working, spending time with loved ones, they take on this whole new meaning.
Yeah, you know, that reminds me of something Dr. Furr said. He was talking about how this too, I see, is from the hand of God, for without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? Like, don't take even the little joys for granted.
Exactly. Practice gratitude. Savor those everyday moments because they're gifts.
You know, it's funny. You'd think a book as serious as Ecclesiastes would be all doom and gloom, but there's this whole other side to it, right?
Absolutely. Remember the enjoy life refrain, as Dr. Furr called it?
Oh, yeah. Coeth was like, hey, go ahead. Have a good time. Enjoy your work, your relationships, the simple act of being alive. Don't waste your precious time being miserable.
Right. He's not sugarcoating the fact that life is hard, but he's also saying, don't forget to find the joy in it.
But how do we square that with all the talk about futility? You know, that our efforts are ultimately meaningless. It feels like a contradiction.
It's not a contradiction. It's a paradox. And honestly, that's what makes Ecclesiastes so profound. It holds those seemingly opposite truths together. It's like, yes, life is hard, and yes, our time is limited, but that makes those moments of joy all the more precious.
So it's like saying, embrace the mystery. Find the light in the darkness.
Exactly. Don't wait for perfect circumstances to be happy. Lean into the present moment. Find contentment, even amidst uncertainty, and trust that there's a bigger plan at play, even if we can't fully grasp it.
It's a pretty liberating message, actually. Like, it takes the pressure off having to control every little thing.
And that surrender, that trust, it leads us back to God.
Not the God who demands blind obedience, but the God who, like, walks with us through the messiness of it all.
The God who loves us, limitations and all.
So we started with the downer book of the Bible and ended up, well, somewhere completely different. It's like this unexpected journey of hope and resilience.
And as we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final question to ponder. If, as Dr. Furr suggests, our limitations are part of God's design, maybe to protect us from overreaching, what does that say about our constant need to know everything, to be in control? Could it be that there's wisdom in embracing our limitations? What might happen if we surrender our need to figure it all out?
Wow, that's deep. Definitely something to think about. Well, folks, that's our deep dive into Ecclesiastes. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep seeking wisdom in the midst of all those beautiful mysteries that life throws our way.